It's community time.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of American Daisies. This is Arjun.
I'm Akash.
And it's community time. I wish we had like a special community song. I don't wish that. I actually don't know that I wish that.
Hey, but users, why don't you write us a community song? Send it to us. You know what I mean? I just want to see what you guys are capable of.
I mean, that would be hilarious to me. Here's where, just quick update. I just got back to Vancouver last night. I was in D.C. with my nanny, which we're definitely going to talk about because she's the fucking best, period.
You don't got to cuss.
Full stop.
Talk about nanny G.
I'm going to. That's how much of a queen she is. Also, I got dumb sick. Got a crazy flu. So I'm still recovering a little bit, folks. And that's just reality for right now. But I think that I do have to say that I feel really grateful. And I'm so blessed that I'm in a position that I get to travel as often as I do and see my family as much as I do, man. I think one of the things that you and I really bond about is family and the importance of family and our...
And we both like your family better than we like you.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't even argue with it. Like, people think I'm joking when I talk about that, like, people will like my family better than they like me. And it's not a joke. It's very true. And Akash has come to realize this as he's met everyone except my eldest sister. And
this is true.
And he will hopefully be meeting them, you know, in the next week or so. So he'll really just have seven people that he likes better than me very soon. But we do. You and I have always felt this. I don't know if you always felt this. That's actually an interesting question I have for you. Since I've met you, an incredibly strong relationship with your family.
Yeah.
Was that always the case for you?
Always. That was one of the things my dad told me. I remember, I think I was in second grade. We were in the car. He would drive me to school, and he told me, literally, family is the most. He didn't say literally. He said, family is the most important thing in the world over everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, all right, well, there you go.
When did that mean something to you? Someone telling you that.
I remember that feeling very heavy, even in second grade. Not heavy like unbearable, but heavy like, oh, this is serious. Family over everything. All right. This is not a joke.
Yeah. You know, I have to be honest. I mean, we were very close, and I think that year in India was big for me, you know, just because being surrounded by family, and I understood that could become an ecosystem rather than where it's not just one family unit of like your parents and your siblings, but then it cousins and you're having potlucks with just the family. And it's like, that's 12 cousins and it's so much fun. I'd never have had a situation like that. But I think really for me, man, was college. When I left home and then all of a sudden started to lean on my family for support.
Yep.
That's when I realized how much that I had kind of taken for granted what I had.
Yeah, and you went to college super far from home. I went to college like an hour away, so I was like, all right, whatever. And then I went to L.A., and I missed my family like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I went to, not only did I go to New York, which was obviously very far from Tampa, but I went to a completely different culture, and I was lost. I was very lost as a freshman. I mean, I nearly quit acting. I nearly quit. I almost transferred down to Florida.
Look,
like,
I don't know how any 18-year-olds come to New York or L.A. It blows my mind that you can make it out of here, 18, or in New York or L.A.
Well, I mean, the only reason I make it was because my family supported me. You know, and encouraged me, but also because I had an infrastructure at NYU that helped me, you know, walk out of into New York City with a community and stuff. But yeah, I mean, for me, again, you know, my nanny, I got to, you know, she's come here. The last time she was here was 2012. The last time I saw her was 2013. You know, she's somebody, I don't know if I've said this on the program, but I talk to her every Thursday. You know, we have a phone conversation
every
Thursday.
It's very sweet. Honestly, for all the girls out there who are already into you. It's really sweet. He calls her every Thursday. She charges her phone. She makes sure it's 100% charged all day, just so that it won't die when Arjun calls. She just like she does. I don't know if she actually understands how long a cell phone's battery life is, or if she just loves him that much that she's like, no, this phone is not coming off the charger until Arjun calls.
It's
He's calling.
So funny how ghetto her phone is, though, man. And she straight up will not. I mean, my parents, while we were home, they were like, my dad kept saying, you know, why don't we get you an iPad? You can read the news on the iPad. And she was like, nah, she's not trying to learn nothing new. So funny. She was talking about her phone. It's not even a flip phone, man. It's the before the flip phone where you just had 9 keys.
And that's little wonderful. Screen. That's wonderful. She got that Nokia
and she's like, I'm not learning anything new. I know what to do with this.
What?
Thing.
What is she gonna tweet? Is she gonna Snapchat? Come on.
I mean, I don't know. She could WhatsApp my parents.
She could.
But anyway, so to be able to see her and get the opportunity to go out there and the little things that I try not to take for granted, but that I had the money that I could afford to drop, you know, last minute flight from Vancouver out to DC, that's not nothing, you know. And so I don't really have a big point here. I guess maybe I'm just bragging that I have money that I can go see my family.
Nah,
is that
what's happening right now? You would do that, but be thankful is the point. That's the point.
But and also just understanding, like, I read this, okay, there's this website, Wait But Why, and it does, like, long-form thought pieces, like, articles. It's a cool website, you know, it'll, like, why does an engine work? So it'll spend, like, you know, 5,000 to 10,000 words explaining, like, how does an engine actually work? So if you have no information, you go in there, and you actually can have a solid understanding about a concept. It was talking about time and how much time we actually have left, and it was really, we think about life as long, and it is, but it's also not. And he was talking about how in, if you read 3 books a year, if you only have, you know, if you're 30 and you have, you know, 50 years left, let's say that, right?
That's 150 books.
That's 150 books. That's kind of intense to be like, holy crap, I have to choose 150 of the millions of books that are out there. And of all the reading lists you can choose, you only get to read 150. That's super intense. And they talked about, and he did the math, 93% of your time spent with your parents was done when you were 18.
Well, I said, that's sad, and it's also very white.
It's very white?
Yeah.
Well, no, think about it though. Even if you spend 20 days a year with your family, which is not like that's a lot.
No, I know what you mean, but my mom is living with me as soon as I can afford it. So that's what I'm saying.
I see what you're saying.
That is a Western ideal is the more PC way to say that. But when have I ever been PC?
Right. No, I don't know. But,
I'm too efficient for political correctness.
But it is. It's like, oh, I need to take advantage. Like, I'm 29. You know, it's not too early to start thinking about just like making sure you soak in the time that we have, you know?
I'm with it. This is going to be a short episode because we're both tired and we're going to soak in our time to sleep. We could do that. Yeah, we also got emails. Hey, guys, good job emailing. We got a few really good emails. Some of you, the vast majority of you are still useless, of you sent some really good emails.
Do you want to do emails first?
Let's do emails first. This one is from Karina. I'm not going to do names, actually, because some people don't want their names out there.
Right.
I had to bank episodes for a rainy day, but I will keep this short. What a sad, and this is about Eves, what a sad, inspiring story about those who are undocumented. Like I said, guys, this is what I'm talking about. These are the voices I wanted to hear when I listened to this podcast. Okay, I didn't realize how demanding this person was up front, but all right. All right, dog. All right. Thanks for giving us your demands. People act like we have just an infinite list of every, like there's a billion Indians in India and we just have access to all of them and we just pick and choose. Jesus Christ. No one gives us a good guess. When we're like, hey, send us guests, everyone is like, me, I'd make a good guess. No, you wouldn't.
All right, wait, hold up a second. But dive into this person's
email. Eves is such a humble, endearing, and determined guy, and I find myself laughing with him, Wyclef Jean, and also deeply upset, bringing pride away from his parents. We'll take a lot away from this episode, and although there are still hard times ahead for Eves and his family, I smile knowing that he has an amazing support network and family. Arjun, I can't believe you didn't realize how many undocumented people there are. Just go to New Jersey and speak to the locals, and I bet you'll be easily to find 10 people in a day that are undocumented. Residing in the UK, I can also go to a predominantly South Asian area and find 10 people without even trying. I guess we didn't know.
Well, can I say this? This person brings up an interesting point there between the UK and the US that I think speaks to something that Eve's talked about, which is really important. Our ability to talk about this within our own community. Eve's talked about how much shame there is in our community, and he credited it to this model minority myth, which is a theme that comes up a lot in as we're talking with these more activist or advocacy group people, the model minority myth and the problems of that model minority idea. And one of the ones that one of the big problems seems to be for Eves, you know, that people can't talk about this. So I don't know that if we had gone to New Jersey and walked around Edison, that we would have just been able to be like, hey, undocumented people, will you come talk to us? Like, that's not, I think that's maybe in the UK things are different like that. And I'd love to hear if that's true, because obviously this person's in the UK and can speak to that. But I think in the US, that is something that we have to continue to combat, this idea that we can't talk about it with each other because there's a shame attached to
it. Well, it's quite possible they don't have the shame in the UK because they don't have the model minority myth, because the Asians there's a lot of stupid ones. So,
well,
they don't
that's what I'm saying.
I expect you to be this. Like, I went to Birmingham, and the South Asians there are savages. And
oh, God.
And I will never forgive them for the show that I did, and that's just what that is, okay?
I felt shame. I felt shame, for sure, that I wasn't aware of this. Actually, I gotta be honest, there's a number of times I feel shame when I'm doing this podcast that I don't, of just how naive I am.
I feel that all the time. It's that whole thing about being Indian enough, I think, is what it ties back to for me, at least.
For me, it's even just like how different my experience has been to the community at large's experience with my Indiansness. Also, just the issues that the community faces that I've just been so unaware of. And you know, I feel happy and fortunate that, you know, I now have the awareness, and I feel grateful that, you know, through the show we can bring a little bit more awareness to people. But we are the fourth largest undocumented population in this country. And, you know, as I've been paying attention to the conversation around immigration, you know, I've been following, obviously, election season, a lot of stuff about politics. Immigration comes up obviously a lot as you know, Trump keeps talking about his wall, but he doesn't talk about South Asians that much.
Yeah.
I mean, he talks about the ban on Muslims.
I mean, we are a distant fourth for, let's keep that in mind, for whatever
sure.
that's worth. We are.
Sure.
It's not that newsworthy to be a distant fourth.
No, but I think there's a sizable, it's a sizable enough population where we have groups that are dedicating causes to this. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I mean, no, look, to get Eves on, again, thank you to Eves for, he didn't have to. He definitely, that was a generous and brave thing to come and tell his story to two people that were strangers. Honestly, we didn't know him before that morning, and to all of you who he doesn't know, that's a big thing. And so he's one of those people that definitely, along with many of the guests we've had who have been younger than us, gives me hope for the future, that there are people that are actually, like, you know, doing really smart and good things in the world. So,
word.
Yeah.
Next,
you got
email.
Another email?
Yeah, we got a few. This one is about Asian solidarity. This was sent before the Arthi episode. It's kind of long. It's essentially asking, do you think there are enough, should there be more attempts by the South Asian and East Asian communities to unite and form a more expansive Asian American identity? Or does it get lost because we genuinely don't care about each other? That's a very abridged version of what he sent, but I didn't know if we had already touched on all his other questions with Arthi or not.
You know, I think that it was kind of amazing to have Arthi's episode right after getting that email because of that organization's pan-Asian mentality or mission, for lack of a better word.
Here's what's interesting, though. This guy went to Berkeley, and he said he didn't see any real, like, Asian, like, he said he was in a hip-hop dance organization, overwhelmingly East Asian. Mm-hmm. And he made friends there, but he said he also never felt like he really fit in. So this is Berkeley. This is South Asia. This is San Francisco, where Arthi's organization was.
Berkeley's a different place than San Francisco. They're not exactly the same.
Really?
I think they're different communities for sure. And also, one's a college.
I always thought of Berkeley as being very San Francisco in its ideals.
Minus
the tech culture. Sorry.
I think that Arthi's organization feels unique. You know what I mean? That was a very, like, that was a big departure from a lot of thoughts and attitudes we've experienced. I do think that there's quite the divide between East Asians and South Asians. And I'm in favor of solidarity in general. I don't always know how that looks.
Yeah, because it's also tricky. Like, are we going to expand this podcast to be fully Asian when we don't even really know what it means to be Indian or Pakistani or Bangladeshi or Sri Lankan, and now we're going to go, you know, it's like a weird, I'm not saying what's wrong or right, I'm just saying it is tricky.
No, it becomes like, what? When does the boundary, right? I mean, but what becomes the boundary of the circle? Because, you know, again, as we've learned, a community has to be us, and then there's a them. That's inherently what that means to be a community. Right. So when we're thinking about what is a community, that's why I think it was really cool. And I'm not sure if this was Arthi or someone else we spoke to, but, you know, the bridges between communities. And I liked that image. That was helpful for me when thinking about this, because then it's still like there's still a river between communities. There's still boundary, right? That's still different, but they're still connected. And I think that that was what was cool about Arthi wasn't saying that her organization lives in a vacuum, you know, being Pan-Asian, but it's important that there were specifically South Asian or specifically East Asian organizations as well. And so it's like, hey, you guys are handling the very specific, but we want to talk about a broader conversation, and that it's not one or the other. It's the both that we have to take a step back and appreciate that it's the both of them. It's not Martin Luther King versus Malcolm X. It's both of them. It's the dialogue between yin and yang. My voice teacher said something that was really profound to me, and it probably has no space on this podcast, but I really it excited me because we were talking about singing, and I was talking about how, you know, there's reconciling of yin and yang that he was really asking me to do in one of the exercises. And he said, yeah, singing is yin and yang. And, you know, he said, but it's not about reconciling. It's about getting used to the war between. And I was like, whoa.
I'm just thinking about how much less Vonnie talks than you. And
I mean, like, I mean, the propensity to monologue is really true. Whoever, I mean, that's, I think about that so much now. Good God.
Guys, some of these comments on these, you know, I keep hassling you guys who write reviews on the iTunes page. There's a couple of them. One in particular that really, this person does not like me, and one that doesn't seem to care for Arjun. And man, it's the funniest thing in the world.
But it's so true. It was just like Akash's comic timing, you know, balances out Arjun's propensity to monologue. And it's just the propensity to monologue. It's just, I mean, if I had to, you know, that should be my Instagram bio or something. Like, I don't.
Yeah, we got on a call. Arjun's exhausted. He's sick. He was like, yo, this is going to be a 20-minute episode. I'm just exhausted.
It's been 20 minutes already, and I haven't shut up.
Two questions or two emails. two emails.
Okay, okay, okay. I'm going to try. I'm going to practice this, guys. This is going to be a problem. I'm going to try brevity.
Man, you got to do you. You got to do you.
Go.
You just, you find the medium between me and you. You know what I mean? All right. This story, no names. He starts off complimenting the podcast, says a lot of nice things. We do what we can. a little backstory on me. My parents are from South India, and my siblings and I were raised in Spokane, Washington. Spokane is predominantly white demographically. Buddy, I think we already knew that. When I was very young, some of the Indian community would gather monthly at various houses for puja, no Hindu temple in Spokane, but much of that community moved away as I got older. Growing up in a predominantly white city, combined with the fact that my parents had an arranged marriage that involved a lot of fighting and unrest within the house, won't get into details, but say it got very ugly sometimes, many times, in part led me want to disassociate with Indian culture. I completely blocked out that part of my life and tried to assimilate in order to fit in. Though there was not a lot of blatant racism to me, I think, and then he talks about terrorist jokes that happens. I think that with the fighting that was going on within the house, combined with wanting to fit in as a kid growing up in a white city, really led me to lose touch with and deny my culture. It's interesting to see you guys mention South Asians being drawn toward African American culture, because I definitely found this to be true growing up, though I didn't realize it at the time. I think I subconsciously knew I was different, and looking back, I can see that I was naturally drawn to be best friends and most comfortable with kids from immigrant/African-American families. The desire to dissociate with Indian culture culminated with my mom ultimately deciding to get a divorce right as I was leaving for college, and throughout college, I had some internal struggles and feel that I really lost myself in things such as partying and dealt with uncovering some of the experiences I had growing up as a person of color in Spokane. Since college ended, I began to slow things down, gain a better understanding of these experiences. In December 2014, I made a trip to India for the first time in a long time, and this has played a huge role in me wanting to find my identity as an Indian American. I've enjoyed coming back in touch with my culture, though at times it has been hard to find the space between these two cultures. I feel like Indians see me as American, Americans see me as Indian. Reconnecting with Hinduism has played a big role for me, as I find that meditation and understanding the world through my understanding of an all-pervading God has helped to get a perspective on things. One thing I'd be interested in your opinion on, I have such a great respect for Sikhism and have noticed the identity and community plays such a big role for them, and in my opinion, that allows for the diaspora to be more connected to India because they are brought up with the notion of the importance of identity and being comfortable in your own skin. For the Sikhs, Gurdwaras play an important role as a common meeting place for the community. I should not have read this whole thing. I'm just now realizing this. This is like an Arjun answer.
However, but it's interesting.
It is very interesting. I think this can have a positive impact on children growing up in the U.S. as this creates fan groups and support system, and they can lean on challenges growing up as a community. I'm going to skip the rest. Thank you for your thoughts. It's just a lot to read in a short podcast episode.
Yeah, I think that one. I mean, what a common story that we've all experienced, that we've heard a lot. You know, wanting to disassociate and trying to fit in,
it not is knowing exactly how to. The story of it's my story in so many ways. So much of that that resonated with me.
Yeah, and it's just me. And maybe you know, you and I have always approached this as like, hey, we need to fix that narrative, you know, we've needed to change that. Maybe not, man. You know, maybe that's just the process, you know, and maybe that's just how the butterfly comes out.
Well, you always have a thing about how struggle defines you. You have a quote that you always use. What is it again?
Struggle defines you.
I thought there was like something like fire forms, whatever.
No.
But I say this about racism. I think it's good to go through racism because that tells you you're different, which a lot of people don't agree with. But it's kind of the same thing of like these hardships kind of bring you back to your culture eventually.
Well, I guess I say that to say, hey, you're not alone in this story, in this journey, you know, and I think that a lot of people share that. I think that when it comes to Sikhism, and I you know, we haven't had the pleasure of talking about this enough on the show.
Right.
But you can't pass when you're Sikh in this country. You can't pass as being anything other than other, you know.
Yeah.
And since the rise of Islamophobia, since 9/11, since, you know, people confuse Islam and then the turban and jihad, you know, they've faced an outward. Not only are you as outsider, then you're an outsider who could be a threat. So I think that, yeah, that's caused that community to be more connected.
So you know? I actually sent this email to my girl because my girl is sick. And then she responded, I'll just read her response. I think while being Sikh in America can be more difficult than being Hindu in terms of racism, we definitely had positive aspects of going to Gurdwara every week with a Khalsa school and learning Punjabi, Sikh history, Kirtan, and Tabla, and just having that social circle. Even going to Sikh camps were some of the best memories of my life, and we always had discussions on how to deal with bullying for boys wearing turbans and girls who decided not to shave or cut their hair. And I never actually thought about it until recently, but I found myself and Sikhs in the U.S. more religious than my cousins or other Sikhs in Punjab. Because we're forced to build a community here unlike them, and there's a greater appreciation for the history. Like, I can read and write in Punjabi, and they can't. I kept my long hair, and they don't, etc.
Wow. And then that's our response. That's the response.
Yeah.
Visiting correspondent, your girlfriend. Beautiful. Well, thank you for the email. Any other emails, or should we dive into
Twitter? Yeah, we have another
email. Another email? Wow.
We had a lot of emails.
What's going on? This is beautiful.
Yeah, again... A lot of compliments up front.
He's saying that, guys, he's saying that dismissively only because he's uncomfortable with compliments.
I just feel like it's a lot to read all the compliments.
No, we don't need to read it out loud, but like we do appreciate the compliments. Look, I mean, look, any positive feedback, we're obviously, look, we don't make money off of this. We do this out of just purely
something
we want to do because we believe in the community.
Also, also something we would like to make money off of, you know what I mean?
Right. Sure.
Same volunteer work.
Right. But anyways, continue.
I've been listening to old episodes, but finally caught up with the newest one with Vani. Listening to Arjun and his sister recall such disparate childhoods was a lesson in, quote, how men and women are so different, end quote. They had the same experiences and influences, yet they remembered it so differently, or not at all, and were shaped by it in their own unique way. I wonder if the eldest sister has memories more like Vani or Arjun.
Yeah, I think can't wait to get my sister Aditi on the show and ask her, because I think that that's a really interesting question. Was it gender stuff, or was it simply just that, you know, me and my sister are very, very different people, you know? And so is it a gender thing, or was it just a personality thing? What was that difference? I think it'd be really interesting to talk to my third sister and find out.
Yeah, and if the gender thing is just a gender thing, or if it's a gender thing because of how gender is perceived in India.
Oof, you know what I mean? That's even more, yeah. Well, again, love to talk to my sister as soon as we can get out to Houston or be in it's simply just been a logistic thing, so we will get that interview probably next year.
Word. A couple more emails. This one, again, a lot of compliments. Really appreciate it. I have a lot of things to say to you, but I know you're recording the community episode very soon. I just saw Akash's tweet. Arjun, thanks for making me tweet that, by the way. Dog, much appreciated. I'll end with my question. Email you later. All the reason I love the podcast. My question, you guys always talk about being South Asian, but how do you define being Asian? Do you think South Asians and East Asians should be lumped together? The instant connection you feel with Desi people, do you feel that with East Asians? This has always been an area where I love to hear other people's perspectives. Love you guys.
Love you too. Here's the thing, I'm going to say something. I don't know that I ever feel that instant connection with people just because they're brown. I mean, it's growing for me.
Boy, probably. I do.
I know you do. I'm saying for me. It's growing for me, sure. Do I think we should be lumped together? Maybe it's just that word lumped together feels problematic for me. But should we be thought of as a similar community? I think we should be thought of as similar, sure. I think that we should be thought of as similar in the same way that I think that all people of color should be thought of.
I'm not into it. I don't want them getting our spelling bees. You ain't doing it. We won 6 in a row, not you. All right? So I'm not ready for this.
I do think that it's a very interesting thing when we talk about East Asian versus South Asian, that in a continent that is Asia, that it's been so clearly divided to the point where...
Wasn't it you that also brought up... I'm sorry to interrupt. Wasn't it you that also brought up... It's really Europe, Asia, Middle East, it's all one landmass. So why do you divide at all? Why is that three different continents on one landmass?
Right. It's not three different continents. It's just two.
Oh, yeah.
But we think of it as four different sections. We think of it as Europe. We think of it as the Middle East. We think of it as Russia. Oh, five, actually. South Asia and East Asia. And maybe even a sixth one if we think about Southeast Asia as well. Where Africa gets no. It gets one. It's one thing. South America's one thing.
Because,
North America's
because let's be honest, three because things. They're all the same color in Africa.
They're not, though.
That's our perception of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I think that it's a way of dividing power, I think. And that's what I think has been struck with me the most lately, that was we as communities of color divide ourselves by these ways, we are giving up our communal power. So I don't know that we need to be lumped together, but I do think that I'm more in favor of finding ways of bridging the communities.
All right, fair enough. Bill, this last email I'm really excited about. We're going to try to get this person on the podcast.
Blindness?
Yeah. Not sure if you guys have talked about this, but something I'd be interested to hear about is how disabilities are viewed in the South Asian mm-hmm. community. As someone mm-hmm. who has a disability myself, I'm blind, I've realized that growing up and now in my adulthood, I tend to gravitate toward other races since I haven't had a positive experience with my disability with the South Asian community. I'm Indian, but I guess I don't really feel connected to that identity due to the lack of acceptance or understanding of experience in our community. As a blind woman in my early 20s, I feel success and fulfillment in what my life is, yet in the eyes of many South Asians, I'm viewed more negatively. Would love to hear you guys' perspective on this and speak to it more if you have questions on it.
Yeah, I mean, I have a feeling that we're going to realize that it's not great in our community, because I think that there are many ways in which our community is flawed. And I think one is that we are quite an intolerant community. And I think that that's something that I'm a strong advocate for change. But I would love to, but I don't know. I don't know. I don't have experience with this from a community standpoint, or even, to be honest, I'm not in touch with that many South Asians that are disabled. So this is a great standpoint for us, like I said, to get this person on the show and hear it from them.
Yeah, it makes sense to me that she wouldn't feel a lot of that, because, like, you know, no matter how valid they are, we don't necessarily tolerate excuses that well. And I don't want to say excuses in a negative way. I just mean, like, I guess reasons for not doing something. We're just kind of like, whatever, just do it. Whether, you know, like, blindness is obviously a super valid obstacle, but I think Indian families tend to just look at the bottom line and be like, well, did you do it or not?
Yeah, and I think it's the same thing that they do with mental illness. You know, it's like it's a thing that people will somehow shame or somehow makes you different and or not perfect.
I've seen a lot of South Asian families won't even accept the idea of mental illness. Like even mm-hmm. ADD, ADHD, that it's like, nah. But, like, more serious mental illness, they're like, don't say that. Like, it's offensive that, like, you would say about someone's, like, if you try to say to someone's mom, like, hey, I think your kid might have this, they're like, how dare you say that to me?
Right. I mean, and look, and I want to be very clear. I'm not advocating that any of this is okay, or am I, or Akash, even equating mental illness with any sort of physical disability. But, you know, we'd be honored to have you on the show and share that story. I'm going to dive into tweets because
it
has been a while. Anyway.
Thank you all for the emails.
Yeah, seriously.
Appreciate
really
it.
Do appreciate it.
It makes
what we do more fun too, because it helps us think of who else we can come and talk to, you know. And
yeah. Also,
Real
Abs is searching for tweets. Oh, you got that? Got that?
Yeah, got that. Real Abs, you guys should try and get 6-year-old Akash Vakoti on the podcast. I don't know who that is, but the idea of a 6-year-old, it sounds hilarious. There's nothing that can go wrong there. We got some few Follow Fridays and some, you know, just in general, you know.
People still doing Follow Fridays?
Yeah, I guess.
Follow Friday Snapchat. How about that, you 2009 living ass? Follow Friday. All right.
At Games and Ganja, which is a hilarious Twitter handle to me. I have a question for American Desis. Do you know of any AAA hashtag Desi PC games or hashtag game dev, why or why not? Why do I not know anything about what you're talking about?
I have because no idea. Was that Mandarin you just read?
I know. We're gonna have to do some research or crowdsource that one.
Yeah, we're gonna crowdsource. You could do research. I'll crowdsource to you. You think I'm gonna look that up? You crazy?
Yeah, because I don't know what a AAA Daisy game is. No, I don't know anything of what just happened. At
Kabaddi.
Anjali. Oh, I get it. Sorry. I'm really not good at Twitter. Stumbled upon American Daisies today, and it got me through a long day at work, cut my finger, and an intense workout. The idea of somebody working out to us is hilarious.
The worst workout podcast I could possibly think of.
But apparently.
Think of how much longer a 1 hour run seems when 45 minutes of it is Arjun answering one question.
Someone asked how we send in comments. I'm just going to throw this out there because maybe more people want to know this. You can email us AmericanDaisiesPodcast@gmail.com. That's AmericanDaisies, plural, podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us and Facebook.
Or, yeah, you can just use the same medium you were using to ask us how to communicate with us. It's like me calling you and asking you what your number is. It's ridiculous.
I was going to be nicer about it, but, you know, that's our difference.
Knocking on your door like, hey, dog, where you live?
There's an I am an immigrant movement. IamAnImmigrant.com. We have not sourced this or checked this out. This is from @FatimaMahmoud. If people are interested, check that out. IamAnImmigrant.com and let us know. Again, we're saying we don't know how legit this is. Raja Kumari sent us, have you heard our mixtape? I got to be honest, I haven't. But we should check that out because that seems like that's cool. Then some people try to hook us up with a guest, which is very nice. Talking about Arthi, people loving the Arthi episode, people loving the Deepa episode, which is great. This is interesting.
Okay, go ahead.
I got one. Sorry. Lexicon Blue @LexiconBlue found the gem. At American Daisies, thanks to episode Brown Guys Are Sensitive, my new work in progress male protagonist Rajan is getting softer edges and a mud mask. I love that. That's fun. That's funny.
Is my male protagonist a fancy way to say my boyfriend?
No, she's writing a work in progress. She's writing
a work in progress. Okay, I got you now.
Yeah, so I didn't say that clearly. it's the same person. Love that @Akash Singh is totally unaffected by Arjun Gupta BK charm and calls him on the BS.
Hey, you are my favorite Twitter user.
I mean, I really got to be honest. I love when people call me on perceived BS. I think it's really interesting. It's fun. Do that. @Ramya1, I'm in love with your sister. Wish I was still in D.C. so I could be her friend. Ramya, I just want to let you know I took a photo of that one and sent it to my sister, and she was very touched. So, you know, if you ever end up back in D.C., we'll hook that up. And then there's a documentary trailer that @RujiQ sent that looks really cool. And it's about Gulabi Gang, which is a gang of women in India who track down and beat abusive husbands with brooms.
Yo, I heard about this. This is dope. And I think about this. This is so funny.
I mean, I'm so conflicted. I'm conflicted only that, like, one, y'all love that they're standing up for their community and stepping up and doing something. I wish that I don't believe violence is open, but hey, if that stops someone from abusing somebody else and they need to be beat with a broom, you got to take that step.
Malcolm to your Martin. You bust his ass any means necessary. Also, how emasculating is it to get beaten up when you're beating your wife, but you get beaten up with a bunch of brooms? Ugh, man, that's too good. That's too funny.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, the documentary is going to be cool. Actually, I have a friend, Julie Bersani, who they made a short film called The Pink Saris, which was all about this. And they're trying to develop that into a feature. It's cool. Someone asked us to talk about Hasan Minhaj's speech. I'd like
shouts
to
because Prashant, who wrote
that. Prashant wrote that, yeah. Wrote that with him. I didn't listen to it yet. Have you?
Yeah, I've read it. Well, I was with Prashant. He came to New York, and we were hanging out Friday. And, you know, we know Prashant. I know how smart this dude is. That's a homie. And I was like, let me ask you honestly. I'm reading these lines, and they're, like, incredible. Like, he talks about the funding. $3.7 million has gone from the NRA. And he's like, how about I give you $4 million? Then what would you do? And I was like, how much of this that's on this viral clip? Because he's like, they cut up the speech. I was like, how much of this is your words? All of it was Prashant that went viral. And I'm just proud of him, man. I'm super proud of Prashant. Shouts to Prashant, our, I think, second most listened to podcast episode.
Yeah.
To this day.
Also, I mean, look, I got to shout, you know, Hassan. Is it Hassan? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Hassan.
Hassan. Hey, you know, shouts to you for taking, you know, you have a platform. I mean, you know, you get to host this correspondence dinner for radio and it's radio ads, right? Radio guys. It's a big look, and taking advantage of that platform and going and trying to say something and, you know, and relying on your support system. I think that that takes a lot of, you know, courage in its first off to, like, say, yo, listen, I want this to be great, and I want to reach out to some people that I write with that are going to help me make this as great as possible. And, you know, it definitely has had a lot of impact. You know, people have been talking about it. I've heard a lot about it. I just haven't had the chance to.
It was a good speech.
Yeah. So I don't know what else there is to say about it except, you know, I'll listen to it and maybe there's more to say. But do you have anything specific you were like, yo, I need that you want to highlight or no?
No, I just thought it was a really effective way to get that, because we always have this gun control debate. And I feel like so many of these debates, gun control, abortion, whatever, so few people can argue passionately and well. You know what I mean? And that was, it was just like, all right, here we go. Someone's finally doing this right.
Well, beautiful. Let's get that to everyone. Yeah, I guess actually, shit, it's crazy. You spent this whole time and we didn't talk about Orlando at all. I don't know that I have anything to offer that anybody else hasn't said in the world right now. But I do want to say this is, any sort of hate towards the gay community, it's just not, we're past it. We got to be past that as people, man. We just got to be past that. It's just time to, like, we're all people. And when stuff like that comes up, that's why I think about bridges between communities. Cause I'm like, man, we're all in this fucking thing together. Like, at the end of the day, aren't we all just trying to get through the day and, like, figure this out? Why is it, like, who's got, the person that's got this figured out, come at us, please, because I don't. You know, it's so interesting. You know, people may perceive that, you know, people probably perceive that I'm in, that I've got it all figured out because I'm working. I'm a working actor. I'm on a TV show. I have a podcast. I'm on a theater company. You know, I'm in good shape. But
all right, why you keep writing? We're listening off your credits at a time like this.
But this is what I'm saying is because I don't know. I'm so lost so often, guys. Like, so lost. I have barely a fucking clue what I'm doing. It's like, why would we ever think that anybody else? I don't know. It's just, we're all in this together is all I'm trying to say. That's all I'm trying to say.
Everybody keeps trying to find one solution, and I don't. For some reason, that hasn't been sitting right with me. Maybe it's just my way of compartmentalizing the fact that I don't sit there and offer solutions, but, like, everybody's like, nah, you just fix this thing and everything goes away. The only thing I can think of that might fix things is love yourself. This dude was gay, wasn't okay with the fact that he was gay, was shamed for being gay, and it's wrong to shame people for being gay, but if you love yourself in spite of all, because negativity is not going to go away in the world, especially not overnight, so love yourself, and if you love yourself enough, most of the time I hate other people or hate on other people. It's me being insecure. And when I realized that, I got a lot less bitter. I still got a long way to go, but, like, you get a lot less bitter. You get a lot less hateful because it's like, it's just, you hate yourself and it's come manifesting itself in some really ugly ways. Just love yourself as much as you can. And that will, nothing will eliminate. There's no one solution for any of this, but that's the one that, like, it seems like it would do the most good. It's just love yourself.
And I'll say this, and because I've said this a number of times, and I'll keep saying this, the Marianne Williamson quote is that is my guiding light. One of the byproducts of loving yourself is that you give other people permission to love themselves. And so there might be another Omar walking around the streets and they see you loving yourself, love themselves. You know what I mean? And we don't always know the ripples, but I know that that is a ripple that happens in the world. So, I mean, I think that's a beautiful sentiment, Akash, and I think that's a beautiful way to close this tonight. We're coming back at you next week with more content. Honestly, we have the rest of our year interviews out. We just haven't scheduled it out, but really thrilled with the and very fortunate with the people that we've gotten to talk to. And there's really exciting stuff coming up from, you know, the bureau chief of the UN for the New York Times, Soumi Sen Gupta, to we had a professor who's written a novel, to just
Rabia
dope people
from Serial.
Oh right, yo, we Rabia have Chowdhury. Rabia. Yeah, we gotta drop
the homie.
That too.
She's the homie now. Shouts to Rabia.
So, anyways, we're gonna come at y'all next week. Thanks for listening. We love you. That's
rate
it.
The
I'm
podcast,
Arjun.
Subscribe to the podcast. Blah blah blah. Do something with your life.
I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
And we'll catch you next week.
God bless.